And but then, are you going to announce, what is the, how are we going to announce the award?
So I think that it's going to be between you and John.
But what's the full title? I don't even remember what the award is.
L'Ordine della Stella della Italia Rinata or something along those lines.
What is it? Ordine, what I call it? I came up with that in a fantasia world. What was it?
L'Ordine della Stella d'Italia Rinata.
I just put my headset back on and heard that. And heard you laugh at yourself and say, what did I call it? It's the first time I've ever heard you laugh at yourself. Because
that wasn't a fantasy. I killed that. Was it L'Ordina di Stella d'Oro? What's even making more of that?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
And they're going to get a big, they're going to get cookies.
Of course.
Yeah. Oh, shucks. I would have written a diploma if I knew.
See that you're born an Italian if you want your life to be great. See that you're born an Italiano and your life will be great. From the moment you're a small bambino, you eat pizza, you drink vino.
Then they make you roly-poly.
You get stuffed with ravioli. If your mama's a paisano, you will have the world on a plate. So see that you're born an Italiano and your life will be great.
Hey there, paisani. Welcome back to another episode of the Italian American Podcast. I'm John Viola, and we've got a special episode for you today, one in which you are going to get to meet some of our really wonderful listeners, some of our fans out there, who are being recognized on this episode with the special award that was dreamed up by none other than my partner in crime, the notorious POB, Pat O'Boyle. Pat has created what we are calling the Il Sacro Ordine della Stella d'Oro d'Italianità, the Sacred Order of the Golden Star of Italianness, I think is the best name after the dozens that we've come up with. But Pat wanted to recognize some of our listeners and some of our friends in the new neighborhood who have written to us or contacted us and shared with us the family traditions that they have revived or brought back or evolved forward based on their interaction with the podcast and the platform and everything we try to do. And so we're really looking forward to sharing some of them with you and bringing them on here on the show to not only get the recognition that they deserve for all they're doing, but also to sort of inspire everybody else out there and encourage everyone to think about your family traditions and the things that you might have lost and you might miss, and look at ways that you can bring them back and share them with the younger generations of your family and make them new and exciting for future generations. So, Pat, what exactly was the impetus behind this whole thing?
The reason why I wanted to establish this award, this honor, this recognition, is that there are so many unsung heroes in the Italian-American community who are working in the home, in the neighborhood, in the parish, to hold on to these traditions that this podcast was created to celebrate. And they're unknown. Maybe what they're doing is only known locally or within the family, but they are planting the seeds for a future resurrection of our Italian-American civilization. Because by continuing these traditions or reviving these traditions or going above and beyond to teach it to their children or bringing it back, they are planting the seeds, because we are all here today because someone planted a seed in us.
Yeah, that's true.
It was the grandmother, the grandfather, the uncle. I mean, did my grandmother think all the time she dedicated to me?
Yeah.
And all the stuff she taught me would ever take off into something like this project? She's the star of everything I have.
I feel the same way about my grandparents.
Because she gave it to me. What better monument can I give to her than this podcast? So for these unsung heroes, I want to recognize them for the efforts that they have done and to encourage other people. You know, oh, are we making the pies this Easter? And there's always, I call it, the negative Nelly in the family. Oh, what do you want to be bothered with that for? Oh, it's going to raise your cholesterol. Oh, it's too much work. Oh, I never liked them anyway. There's always somebody trying to tell you not to do it, right?
Yeah.
And so people are sitting around a table at Easter and they don't have anything that was in the family because, you know, negative Nelly said, oh, why do we have to be bothered with that for? Like Heather in the new neighborhood said, just the time of people gathering as a family to create these projects, to make the Easter bread, to make, you know, the great grandmother's ravioli recipe for Christmas, to jar tomatoes like when Mike jarred the tomatoes. just to gather, that builds a family.
And the idea that people are reviving these things, like, I think that's, for me and you, having gone through this journey together, and everybody in the audience knows how I always pushed you, we have to participate with this podcast, Dolores and Anthony, get Rosella. I think it's safe to say one of the pleasantly shocking things for you is how many people write us and tell us how they've revived a tradition, or they, you know, they decided to name their kid after their parent, or they decided to do this. And I think that's the power of this platform. So I like the fact that you're recognizing people who are going backwards into their roots and their memory and reviving and moving forward a tradition, you know?
It's the mortar that holds together the bricks of the family.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is.
If the members of the family are bricks, this is the mortar.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a generation, you know, two, three generations ago, my grandma used to talk about when jarred tomatoes came out, and you could buy them in the supermarket, what a marvel it was.
Yeah.
And my grandma said the first time they bought a can, like, you know, the curiosity, a canned supermarket tomato. So I know I've said in the past how my grandma was paranoid about jarring because of the family that got killed from bad jarring when she was a kid. Her uncle turned to her and said in Italian, "This is house paint. I don't want to eat this. This is house paint."
Yeah.
But for them, they had worked so hard because there weren't options.
Yeah.
So if you wanted tomato sauce on a Sunday, you had to jar it in the summer.
Yeah.
Today we have the options. And with the convenience of modern technology, with machinery, with stuff you can buy for the home, the laboriousness, and it was very, very hard work years ago, it goes from being a hard labor to a beautiful hobby.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's the gift that we have. Could you go out and buy tomatoes? Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, your kids, your parents, even if you're blessed to have your grandparents, your aunts, your uncles, everyone working together to jar those tomatoes, they are the memories that your children will have.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's why I do what I do, is so the next generation has it and it's there and it's a living, breathing example, something evolved forward for the 21st century, but with the essence of what my experience as an Italian-American was, and I hope the essence of what my parents and grandparents and all of my ancestors before shared with me in their Italian-American experience. So this is a wonderful opportunity to meet some really cool people, some stellar Italian-Americans. The three Italian-Americans that you're going to meet today, we spoke to at different times over the course of the last few months. And I know the first one is near and dear to Pat's heart because one of our longtime listeners has taken it upon himself to revive a very ancient Neapolitan tradition within his family. I know many of us grew up having a creche, a presepio at Christmas time, but if you've listened to the show before, you know Pat's completely obsessed with the Neapolitan art of presepio making. And if you've not seen a presepio from Napoli, then you've not seen a presepio. What you've seen is a nativity set. So we're going to go back in time and meet our first awardee, who is receiving this honor for his dedication to the ancient Neapolitan art of presepio making.
So Chris Francese is one of our loyal listeners. He is also a member of the New Neighborhood. He has received the Stella d'Oro for his outstanding, outstanding work for his presepio. Now, everyone knows that deep down in my heart, there's a great love for the presepio. It's a Neapolitan tradition. And I just want to say that Chris, with roots deep, deep, deep in Campania, has built a stellar presepio. And you have one piece, Chris, in particular that got you today's award. Why don't you tell us about that special piece, the church of your hometown?
When I built the actual front of the scene, I had an antique nativity that was my mom's mom's. And after learning about all the presepio, you know, I decided, oh, I want to build something around that. So last year I built that. And we happened to have gone to the town and saw the house that my great-grandfather was born in.
And what town is that, Chris, so everybody out there knows?
That's Tremonti. It's in the mountain right off the Amalfi Coast. So, you know, I was fortunate to see the house that, you know, that my ancestors came from. And I wanted to model one of the houses after that house. So that's how that started. And then from the outside, all you saw was the cork. So this year I said, I want to, you know, put something in the front, like just like the facade of one of the churches. So it was kind of perfect, you know, with the layout of the one church that's in the section of the town, which is Campanola, where that part of the family came from. So I built the facade of the church and the little campanile. And that's what I did.
God bless you.
So just to reiterate for everyone, what is so spectacular about Chris's presepio is that one of the buildings in the presepio is an exact scale model of the church of his ancestral hometown of Tramonti, outside of Salerno, off the Amalfi Coast. He built this from scratch, and that is in his presepio.
Well, let me tell you, Chris, first of all, congratulations on being the first honoree of Pat's newest award. And I'm totally impressed by the fact that you did this and personalized it so much. Do you have any plans to add pieces? I mean, Pat has a serious collection of,
yeah, you know, it's getting out of control.
The
it's
town,
getting like, it's getting it's out get, of control.
Getting out of control?
It's getting, I mean, it's out of control, but it's the next level where it's not funny anymore. But
you foresee expanding the Presepio?
I don't know where I'm going to put it all.
Not you, him.
Oh, yeah, sure. We could have rival, we could be real tight, have rival towns. Your Presepio could be close to you for my Presepio. We could go to war and stuff. My pieces can attack you.
What do you think, Chris?
Well, thank you very much first for the appreciation of what I did. I mean, I've always been a creative type person, so it was so much fun to build. And it is very addicting. Like, I look at it and going, I ran out of space in this windowsill. Like, I'm thinking about, like, where else could I put this thing to, like, expand on it, you know? Like,
uh-oh.
There's not much more I can do. I mean, I added a bunch more figurines this year. The only thoughts I had so far for next year was putting in proper lighting instead of, like, little, you know, little LED lights inside it so it had something. But I don't know what I could do with where it is now.
Chris, building a Presepio is like eating on a holiday. There's always room for more. Do not cut yourself off. I don't care what your wife says. Just tune her out. I'm not a marriage counselor. I'm a Presepio advocate. Keep building. So people are going to say you're wacky, but you could be the Manhattan of skyscrapers of Presepio pieces. The insanity is addictive. You got to keep going. No one can top that piece. They could build something great, but they'll never build something great.
Now, I saw the video, the one that's, I guess, in Brooklyn, that big one that's over there. And I look at that and go, huh.
All I can tell you is God spares one day when we get back to normal life and we're doing our long-planned Italian American podcast tours of Italy. If we get to do one in Naples, we'll have to book an entire day of Presepio shopping with Pat in San Gregorio Armeno, because I've done multiple times an entire day with him at every vendor. And I promise you, you will leave with more mechanics, lighting, figures. You could build a whole country, let alone a village. So,
you know, it's bad when they say, I haven't seen you in a while. It's been a couple of months.
That's very true.
John's been there for those conversations.
That's
wow,
true.
I haven't seen you in 3 months. It's been like forever.
That's true.
And the other horrible thing is when you walk through and there's no more pieces left to buy. It's like being the Alexander the Great of Presepio.
Well, now you could bring Chris and you can have like an apprentice.
Yeah, Chris. You understand that piece you created is the gateway drug. You understand that, right?
Yeah, I look at it and I, you know, I'm always looking at it like, what else could I add somewhere? But I'm not sure in the space that it's at, what I could do.
Just so you know, John spoke when we were in San Gregorio Armeno to the Presepio makers. He wants to have him in the Constantinian order uniform. We're going to have a piece made of John in his uniform, and you can add him. He can guard the baby Jesus with his Cavaliere sword. In full uniform. It's
far more likely that there's a Pat piece made in Naples before mine.
Mine will be on horseback. I'll have the equestrian statue.
Yeah, the fourth wise man.
The fourth wise man.
Chris, congratulations.
Well done.
Whatever
Chris,
Pat
bravo,
is sending
bravo
as the physical prize, I hope you enjoy it. And thank you for listening. And thank you for supporting the show so much. We appreciate it.
And thank you. You got this award today because we are recognizing Italian Americans who have gone above and beyond to preserve and propagate our culture. And that is why we are honoring you today. What you did with that Presepio, you have received the Golden Star today. So Chris, on behalf of a grateful nation, on behalf of all the Italians in America, I say thank you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Now, Pat, your second honoree is someone you've known for a very long time, Mr. Mike Giordano, who is from your hometown, North Arlington, New Jersey, and has recently revived within his family a time-old tradition. And he's also been the engine behind evolving forward his family's traditional Italian-American business into something new and forward-looking and interesting. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about our next honoree, Mike?
Michael Giordano is like the great sage of our time. Because you have a clairvoyance. You see things for what they are. I know Mike since Mike is 13 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
13 years old. I was 15.
You're older than me, right?
Yeah, I'm January 75, and you're December 76.
Yes.
It was Queen of Peace would have, I guess it was the Friday or the Wednesday.
Wednesday.
The Wednesday, when the freshmen would come in. They had this big, like, all the clubs in school would have, like, tables in the gym. And I was with the Italian club, and I was down there, and Mike's sister was a year ahead of me in school. I knew Mike's sister. And she goes, I want you to meet my brother. So that was September of 1990. Wow. Oh, 30 years. I know I'm 30. My daughter, is it 30 years? Oh, wow. I don't know who else I could introduce with more love and more affection.
Well, you're going to make me cry.
As if my blood ran through his veins than Michael Giordano. Michael Giordano is an entrepreneur. He's a philosopher. He's a doctor of great thought. He's a visionary. He's a father. He's a husband. But more important than all that, he is my friend. I know this kid since he was 13 years old. We went to high school together. He was a year behind me in high school. His sister Andrea was a year ahead of me in high school. I remember your sister's sweet 16, and your father had the cases of fruit on the table. Because Mike's family's in the fruit and vegetable business. And they're Italian from Jersey City. We all made the same migration. Italian from Jersey City. They went to Lyndhurst. We went to North Arlington. And I took Italian with Mike. Besides everything else, I took Italian with Mike. And some of the happiest, best memories of my life I have with Mike, with Mario, with all the people that we went to. Chris Ritchie was in that class. I'll tell you how strong the Italian community was in Queen of Peace. When our Italian teacher, who was our leader, was removed. Well, she left Queen of Peace. We had a teacher that came in. Do you know what she said to us? The Italian community was too strong in Queen of Peace. She told us the Italian class was too strong. And she told us we were too proud of being Italian.
Wow.
See, I didn't remember that
back. Yeah, she goes, oh, you are, because of course I started trouble. The only time I got yelled at by the principal was that time. Because knock it off. Because I was trying to leave an Italian revolt. Because she said that, she goes, the Italian kids in this school have to be more open to other cultures.
She was ahead of her time, huh?
Yeah. But we weren't chauvinists. We had a very strong Italian community. But Mike has made, there is nobody funnier in the world than Michael Giordano. He has great wisdom, great foresight. What else I want to tell you? It's a funny story that I remember.
Hey, wait a minute. I got to go for dinner. My wife's cooking. So
let's all right, Mike, I got to do the presentation.
You got the wrong guys here.
You are. Do you understand, life. Mike? This was our life growing up. We had a fantastic childhood.
That's exactly how Pat and I ended up joining on the podcast. It was basically 4-hour conversations about all this stuff, and I said we could do this. We talk like this.
You guys seem like, you know, best of friends. It's like very natural. I like it, and it's absolutely when I hear you guys talking, it's the conversations I have with Pat.
Yeah,
you guys though, honestly, not the podcast. It's beautiful because I'm not real. I was never really like this proud Italian because it was like, my mother's mother would tell me we don't speak Italian because when we came here, you know, you weren't supposed to speak Italian. They said, learn English. And then, you know, she's born, I think, 1917 or 1918. My father's born 33. So my father spoke Italian, but didn't speak to us because there was nobody left to speak to.
Yeah.
So, you know, I only heard the curses. And that's what I would go to school and tell Patrick. And then he would translate for me. And then he'd be like, I can't say that. Because
his father would say stuff. You know, I just laugh.
So it was, that's all I knew. But hearing the podcast and hearing you guys talk about it, I realized that, you know, this is good. I like the tradition. I get it more now because, I don't know, Pat can tell you the story. We opened up the business when I was a senior in high school. So I guess you were a freshman in college at that point, Pat.
Yes,
and we opened December 23rd of 93. And I graduated in May of 94. And my dad passed away in August of 94 at 59. Wow. So I was a 17-year-old, and I was going to go to Rutgers North, like my sister went, and I didn't go because there was nobody in the store. It was just my brother and my mom. So I didn't go, and that was 26, 27 years ago.
Wow.
See, it was like a relief to me because I didn't want to go anyway. My father was going to force me to go, even though I don't think he really believed in it. It's funny because my wife's parents are more that, like, off the boat, closer to Italy. They had that, like, they didn't know what was going on. She had to fill out, like, her brothers had to fill out her paperwork. The things you guys talk about, I've heard on many podcasts.
Yeah.
That was her life. But my parents were both born here. And my father was just in the business. He worked 7 days a week. And it was like, yeah, go to school. But it wasn't something that they really were intricately involved with. Like, it was not. That's why even to this day, I struggle with it with my own kids. Because I hear these kids and they're like all stressed out, which college. And my father would say, they'll take you in any college as long as you have the money to pay for it. And because you know how kids get when they're in their teens. And I wasn't, you know, I just wanted to work because, you know, I wanted to do what they did. So, yeah, I didn't go and it worked out okay for me.
Let me tell you something. Nobody ever worked harder than Mike did. I went to school with Mike. When you were at the first store, not the store you have now, the old store, you guys used to be working 10, 11 o'clock at night, come home, eat, do homework, and go to school the next day.
Yes.
I want this recorded for posterity. They would work till 11 o'clock at night, come home, eat. Sometimes you'd be 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, right? Remember one time your mother made broke it up and came into Italian. Your mother was cooking like broke it up at 11:30 at night that you were bringing home from the store. Wow. Do his homework and go into school the next day.
Well, when we first opened the store, I was senior year. And so my sister was first year in Rutgers, I guess, or second year. And I got my license. I bought this in December, so I got it late. And she didn't want to drive. It was the winter of 94 when it was lots of snow. It was a really bad snowy winter. And I had a 1984 Delta 88. That was my mom's when she got it when it was new. So it was a 10-year-old car. Transmission was bad. The heat was broke. And the window wouldn't go up. But you didn't want to spend $300-$400 to fix the motor in the window. So my sister didn't want to drive to Newark, to Rutgers. So I would drive the car. And then I would get out of Queen of Peace at 2:35. I think we would get out. Right, Pat? And would go to Newark, pick her up, and then go to Jersey City. If I wasn't in the store by 3:30, I would get... What took you so long? What I did? You don't want this? I did those for you. But my dad started on a horse and wagon with $100.
Sure.
Because his brother, I'll tell this one quick story and then I'll let you just get to it. My dad was 14. This is the story. I don't know how true this is, but I think it's pretty true.
I love this story about the artichokes. So, tell the story. I love this story.
So he's peddling artichokes 7 for a quarter. So with his brother, I believe his brother, Tony, who was the oldest one, who came back from the war and he was 20 years old, whatever it was. So my dad's a kid. He's 13, 14, something like that. So 7 artichokes for a quarter. He gets the quarter and he's flipping it in his finger. Now, you talk about blood memory all the time. I believe it's true because my son can't keep his hand still for 2 seconds. And I refuse to get him a fidget spinner because I don't believe in that. So he's flipping the quarter in his finger and he drops the quarter down the sewer. So he gets back to the wagon and his brother says, "Where's the quarter?" "Oh, I dropped it." So he beats him in the street and he goes back home and he says, "Hey, Paul, I want to go out by myself. I don't want to go with Tony anymore." So his father gives him $100 and a wagon and a pony. I still have the wagon today, right now in my store. The wagon's there.
Wow.
Took that wagon, brought it to Amish country in Pennsylvania, had it completely rebuilt. And I have pictures of me on that wagon as a kid in front of the store. So now I still have the wagon. So he went out with the wagon, $100 and a pony, and started pedaling himself at 13 or 14. Went from the wagon to a truck body with the side cut out, from a truck body to an actual truck, which I have pictures of, which is really nice. A 53 Chevy was his first new truck. And then from there, he built a store, and it goes on and on and on. But 7 artichokes for a quarter started it all.
And you turned the whole business. Now, you, when you took over, from what I understand from Pat,
we were produce. When we first opened in 93 and 94, we were produce. And it was a retail store, big walk-in box in the back. Then I don't know if you know Jersey City, Hoboken area at all. There's a Target there now. Where that Target was, so picture this. We're open for maybe a year, year and a half. My dad dies 8 months after we opened. We were doing real well in the beginning, but everything's chaos. And typical Italian family, which is a whole nother podcast, the wills, everything's not in order like it's supposed to be. There's no succession plan. This is aprons and cash in your pocket. This is not what it is now, computers and this and that.
Yeah.
So Food Mart International opens up where Target is now, which is a gigantic Asian live fish tanks, butcher, they almost put us out of business. We were doing a quarter of the business in 6 months. So then we reinvented ourselves, started doing wholesale delivery to restaurants. And we always sold plants around the holidays. And then we just kept going more. And I got to give that to my brother because he's the one who really pushed the plant stuff more. And we started bringing in plants from Florida, indoor house plants and flower. Now it's nowhere near what it used to be. It's different. But it's a full garden center. So we're doing Christmas trees. So this was a real interesting year with Christmas trees.
Mike, do you guys do seeds? You don't do seeds and stuff out of your place.
Yeah, of course we do. And speaking of seeds, you got to put this in. My friend and Pat knows Mauro Magarelli. He gave me some seeds that his dad brought back from Molfetta.
Molfetta's tomatoes.
The little pointy ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And his dad passed away tragically too at a young age. And he had this, he wrote a story about, it's a beautiful story about the tomato seeds that he found in the garage and he wasn't going to do them. And then he planted them and the seeds, his father would do them every year. And every year we'd take the seeds from the tomato. And then he gave me some of the seeds and I was honored to get those seeds.
Yeah.
And I planted them and I got pictures of me and Maudel with my son who was a baby next to the tomato plants in my backyard. They must be 9 feet tall. And I still have them. I dry them on a paper towel. I put them in the pantry. And I still have the original ones he gave me. I think it was 2011, maybe. And I every year I do them. This year I got sidetracked. I didn't do them. I felt bad. Next year I'm going to do them. Those are real heirloom seeds.
That's exactly. I believe that. And my wife's family's house, they sold their house in Tuscany 2 or 3 years ago. My grandmother's like 93. She was never going to go back. And so my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, my wife and I went to do the clean out. And my wife was talking about, you know, I'm really going to miss how we used to spend the summers under the grapevines here and eat these grapes and blah, blah, blah. So I knew I couldn't bring a grape plant back across the borders. So I took grapes without her seeing and I took out all the seeds. And then I realized you can't just plant grape seeds. You need somebody who could actually figure out how to propagate them. And I can't figure out how to do that.
We have a listener, Owen Taylor.
Do we really?
Yeah, we got a listener. Listen, he's like an Italian neighbor. We got everybody. We got a guy.
I got right, a guy.
Yeah, yeah. Owen, are you listening? Yeah, absolutely.
Right,
he's our guy.
I will find him.
See, John, I'm a retailer. I'm not, I don't know. I didn't.
Yeah,
you
know, people I don't know.
Did you go to school for? No, I just know how to sell things. I started selling rotten cantaloupes when I was a kid. My father gave me a pocket knife. And one of my claims to fame, my most proud moments, I sold an entire pallet of rotten cantaloupes. He gave me a little pocket knife. I was not even 10, maybe 10. And there were all rot spots on them. So now the people who know, that's the sweetest one with the rot spot because it's the most ripe. You cut the little black spot out. Who knows what kind of mold it was, whatever. We didn't care in the 80s. And you cut that out, throw it on the floor. And then you cut them a little piece and give them a sample. Here, taste this. Taste it from a kid. Oh, these are so sweet. Yeah, they're you know, $1 each, 3 for $2. I sold a pallet of cantaloupes in a day when I was like 10 years old. When Pat That's was brilliant. Reading, you know, I guess he was reading about the Two Sicilies or whatever it is. I would go over there and sell them rotten cantaloupes. So I don't know anything about, I don't know much about horticulture, but I know how to sell things.
Let me ask you a question. Did you know the family that owned Coviello's in Madison?
Not personally, no, but my wife's cousin used to work for them and this and that. Yeah, I mean,
the Coviello brothers were like, when we came to town, they treated us like gold because we didn't know anybody and they like kind of took us under their wing and, you know, we were customers.
Yeah, I met a guy around the corner who used to work for Coviello's apparently. I forgot. His name is Giuseppe and older, not that old, but, you know, Italian guy. He rolls around the corner and I got this idea after I did tomatoes. I said, I want to do olives. I cured olives with my dad when I was a kid. I remember doing that. I had this one glass that he would use to smash the olive, you know.
Wow.
And then I still got the glass when I moved my mom because I just built a house for my brother in Madison. And I found the glass. I'm like, I got to keep this. But he used to put me there because he was a bit of a tyrant, you know. And I would sit there and he would crack the olives for him. We would put them with, you know, celery and oregano. We would make, but we cured them. So I was like, I want to cure olives. So I saw this guy out in front of his house. And I never talked to him before, but my wife knew him because her family knows him. He used to work for them and her cousin. So I stopped one day. I start talking to him. Now the guy's my best friend. Talk about the host community, right?
Yeah.
He went and bought me a case of olives at Corrado's or somewhere. Now he found a better place. It's cheaper. Brought it to my house, dropped it off. Then he bought me 5 jars of olives. You know, then he just shows up with mushrooms. He knows how to pick mushrooms, how to forage for mushrooms. And you got to put garlic in because if you don't put garlic, if the garlic turns blue, you'll die. And I already
told my grandfather said, that's what my grandfather always said. If the garlic turns blue, you die.
A mason jar full of, marinated mushrooms that he picked. You got to pick them under an oak tree when the sun's setting and the seventh day and all this. Yeah. And I'm afraid to eat them. So I said, I'm going to wait a little while. If I see him out there, I know it's not the wrong mushrooms. But yeah, you made, and it's because of, again, because of this podcast. And I did the tomatoes, and then I got the woolly, as they say, right?
Yep, the woolly.
And as I want to do olives, I asked this guy. He's like, I never did them, but if you do them all, so I wound up doing them. I don't think I did them right. I know you guys are talking about making some sort of database of how to do this stuff, which was your idea, right, Pat? Making a, use
my. I got a lot of ideas. I forget half.
I think it was something about like.
Start, I forget about it.
Because I didn't know what I'm doing. I put them in it and I'm draining them every day. I'm like, this stuff is this smells.
It's a lot of work. You got to put the egg. You got to put a raw egg in the water.
That's what I did.
A raw egg. When the egg comes to the top,
See, I have the internet now. I did it on my iPhone. I looked up. I said, how do I cure olives? And I got thousands of recipes, but I'd rather hear it from you.
Let me tell you something. One last thing, Mike. You have to send us your father's famous antipasto.
I sent it to you last Christmas, Pat.
No, for the podcast. I want to show everybody. You got to send Stephanie the picture of your antipasto. It is the greatest antipasto. It's huge.
It's like the shield of a Roman gladiator.
You know, I started teaching my son how to make it last year, and I make it every year. And now this year, what's a Christmas this year, right? There's no Christmas.
I know.
Now, so my in-laws, you know, her mom makes a lasagna, and her mom's sauce is the best sauce in the world. So that's why I wanted, when I wanted to do the tomatoes, said, I got it. They're not that old. They're in their late 70s. I got to get them here, and I want to see how they did it, because I did it a different way as a kid. I haven't done it in almost 30 years. I think we might have done it once, maybe tried it. And when I found that machine when I was moving my mom, I was like, the machine works. I'm going to use this machine this year. And then it wound up, you know, it was good timing. But we did it her style, which is different than we used. We used to do it complete, so that it was like the sauce was completely cooked and then we jarred it. And then when you wanted to use it, you open the jar, you heated it up for 5 minutes and it's done.
We had a big conversation about that. A lot of people, like Rosella does it one way. Dolores does it another way. My mother-in-law does it a different way. A lot of people have cooked the sauce, so it's just sauce. And not like we call, I guess ours is past tomatoes, but some people it's full sauce, got everything in it.
So the way we did it this year, we got the tomatoes, we washed them, we cut them up, you know, we cooked them. Mm-hmm. Once they were a little soft, then we put them through the machine 3-4 times, because you got to get all that juice out of the skin, right? You can't let anything go to waste. Then we took that and then we cooked that for an hour, hour and a half. Then we took that, put it in the hot jars, and then we water, you know, we hot water bath that, whatever you call it. And sealed and turned them upside down. We had to have a blanket. You know, then my father-in-law got annoying and I sent them home. I said, all right, enough, get out of here. He wants everything fast his way. And I'm the boss, and I've been used to being the boss for so long and you know, managing 15 people. I don't want to listen to anybody. So he was getting, I said, listen, go home. He got tired. And then her mother helped me, you know, for the rest. We did it her way. We turned it upside down, you know, turned the cans upside down. We covered them with a sheet or a blanket or, and maybe she said a prayer over them or something, but it came out good. I gave a bunch of jars away. Everybody loved it. And I didn't make enough. So next year, we'll make a big production out of it. Hopefully, there'll be no more virus going around. Hopefully. And I had my son's friends came over. They're not Italian. They loved it. The kid was in there with the stick. He's pushing the thing through. That we send the pictures to the mother. The mother was freaking out. Everybody loved it. So it was fun. Next year, we only did, I think, 5 or 6K. Next year, we're going to do 20, because I have that thing where I got to do a little bit more, a little bit bigger.
You certainly earned the award.
This is my people, John. You understand me better now?
Yeah.
This is my tribe.
You know, Pat wanted to create this award to recognize people who are evolving the culture forward by reviving, reincorporating, and evolving these traditions. And the fact that you went out and, you know, you're doing tomatoes.
You know, I think being here, I have my own business. We used to sell produce. So it's still hard for me to go to the supermarket and buy produce retail. I still get a little, I shake, I hate it. I want to go buy a case and give half of it to this guy, half of that guy, just because I don't want to buy one, you know, I don't want to buy 2 pounds of it because it bothers me.
You're right, though.
You know, I always would rather do it that way than do it the, you know, and God forbid anything in a package. And I tell my kid, see, my son's getting, I got to be careful now because he's getting a little, I'm like, what do you think? You're one of these people that give Lunchables? I'll throw her out the window. Are you kidding me? And his friends are starting to make fun of him. He had a few friends that were making fun of his food. And I said, they're off. So what's fun of your food? You're eating wonderful homemade food that your mother make. There's no frozen chicken nugget. What the f*** is a chicken nugget? I tell him this. I tell him, I said, chickens don't have fingers. What's a chicken finger? Your mother makes chicken cutlets. Fresh. Not this frozen shit, this stuff. Get out of here with that. So
tell your son, and I know you listen with him, and we'll shout him out on this episode. He's carrying on a beautiful tradition of proud Italian Americans who got made fun of for their lunch and the greasy paper bags of, you know, cutlet sandwiches.
Yeah.
We've all been there.
Mike?
Yes.
It is my tremendous honor to bring you into the Order of the Golden Star for the outstanding work you did in preserving and propagating our culture. You are an honor to your family. You are an honor to the town of Lyndhurst. You are an honor to Jersey City, to your children, to your parents, and to Queen of Peace High School. I am proud to call you a friend, a fellow alumnus, and I am proud to bring you into this first class of glorious honorati who are pioneers in preserving and propagating our culture. And for the tomato sauce that you made, Mike, I want to say thank you. Thank you on behalf of the entire community for all that you are doing for us, for keeping us, our culture alive.
Well, listen, guys, this was a pleasure. It's an honor. Thank you very much.
No, thank you.
Whenever you want to do a full one, Pat, and you got like 4 hours for me.
Absolutely. We got to get, I want to get Mado on about these tomatoes.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
your favorite entertainment made in Italy. Mediaset Italia has new dramas, addictive quiz shows, and the hottest reality TV this spring. Tune in for new seasons of Italy's favorite talent competition, Amici, the fastest quiz show around, Avanti Un Altro, celebrities marooned on an island in L'Isola dei Famosi, and don't miss new dramas airing Wednesdays starring your favorite Italian talents. DirecTV has the Italian TV you love. Get Mediaset Italia for $10 a month plus taxes, or Italian Direct Package for $20 a month plus taxes. Visit directtv.com/mediaset or call 1-877-912-2702 to learn more and subscribe. World Direct a la carte service requires activation of a qualifying base package. All programming subject to change. For new customers, equipment lease, activation, early termination, equipment non-return, and other charges and restrictions apply. Call 1-877-912-2702 or visit att.com for full details. Well, Pat, that was a beautiful testament to a guy who obviously means a great deal to you. And I'm really happy that we got to have that conversation with somebody who's doing good work moving forward the culture. I'm really glad that you take the time to recognize people who are doing good things. And I'm going to turn it back to you again and let you introduce your final honoree for this episode.
So now we have another one of our Gold Star winners with us here today. And I'm going to give our producer, Stephanie Longo, since our honoree is from her home turf of the world famous Lackawanna County, she is now going to introduce to us our recipient.
Ciao tutti. I'd like to introduce Teresa Cordelli. She is a resident of Peckville, Pennsylvania, so a suburb of Scranton. And she and I have known each other for several years. Her husband, Mark, and I worked together at the Scranton Times. And the thing that I love the most about both Teresa and Mark is just how they live their Italian heritage every day. And Teresa does something extremely special on her Facebook page. She loves to showcase the Italian cooking that she does, but she showcases old recipes that come from her family. And the one that I brought to Pat's attention was actually this edible Easter basket that she does that was handed down throughout her family. So Teresa, can you tell us a little bit about that?
I sure can. First, I must say that in my heart, I do believe that tradition is the brick and mortar to life. We were very fortunate, my brother and I, to grow up in a beautiful, very closely knit Italian family. We lived actually with my nonna and nonno, my mom's parents, and we lived in the homestead that actually my grandfather was in construction. So he built the homestead and it was enjoyed for three generations, my grandparents, my mom and dad. And then actually when Mark and I did get married, the home has four floors. So we gutted one of the floors and we actually did not stray too far. So when they actually say, you know, you get married, but you kind of live near your parents, that's very true. But the story with the Easter basket, I remember as a little girl, my Nonna Gasparini, my mom's mom, there were no recipes. And actually the secret to this is the cup with the broken handle, which was my grandmother's. And that was the cup that she used to measure the flour. So unfortunately, that cup got destroyed in the move from Naples back home. But that was the cup.
Naples, Florida, not Naples.
Not Naples, Italy, Naples, Florida. So it's just the usual, ingredients that she would make. It was a sweet bread. It was a little on the sweeter side. And what she would actually do was she had bowls. I actually use two Pyrex bowls. I've kind of modernized it a little bit, but she would actually roll the dough almost like a gnocchi and she would roll it around the bowl. And then she would place it on a baking sheet and she would get another bowl and she would either braid it or do some kind of fancy design. And I kind of just do my own thing with it and it just turns out really cute. And I just wrap it around a smaller bowl and then you bake it in the oven and then you remove it and you let it sit for maybe about an hour. Then you just put it together and we always had them as Easter baskets, but it was edible. So you could basically eat it because it was bread. It was the same bread that she would make, you know, 8 or 9 or 10 loaves of bread. So it really was delightful. But she would use basically, I could remember some of her aluminum pans. Some of the baskets were even square. So it was basically whatever she had in the house. But there were no recipes. And my grandmother, unfortunately, she went to second grade. They worked very hard. So her writing was not the best. So it took years and years for my mom, because my grandmother would say to my mother, you know, I'll make it. You go over there, I'll make it. Don't bother me, I'll make it. So finally my mom did, you know, kind of get some recipes. And then throughout the years, you know, my mom and I just kind of perfected things because, again, there were no recipes. So the papers that I do have are from my mom. And some of the papers are so old, you know, my mom would take notes and she would write them, and they're going back. I was born in 1959. So they're quite old. And I actually made a beautiful cookbook when my niece got engaged. So I gave that to her at her bridal shower. So they were all recipes from my grandmother, from my Nona. And now my Nona Pascucci, my dad's mom, I did not know either grandparent, unfortunately. You know, I was only, I think, a year when they passed away. But they did something very similar. My aunt, my dad's sister, would make not a basket, but she would make a little gingerbread boy. And I think she would call it either like a dove. How do you say dove?
Columba.
Okay, she would, and it really didn't look like a dove. It looked more like a little gingerbread boy. And what she would do was she would place a hard-boiled egg in the belly, and she would like crisscross the arms with dough. So she made it that way, and then she would put icing on hers with the little colored sprinkles. So I used to go down there, and that was a big production, because I would go down and I would sleep at their house, and I would wake up at 3 a.m. My aunt would wake me up and she would say, okay, we have to make the bread. And it would take hours. But what they would do is they would put the bread under a heating blanket so that it could, you know, raise a little bit faster. But they were just so good in their own way. And unfortunately, I'm really the only one that knows the recipes. There's not
too many. That's why you got the award.
That's why I got the award, I guess. You know,
recipe keeper. And
yeah, exactly.
Your niece's family will only have access to this because you did the right thing.
That's exactly it. And, you know, it's, you know, you just don't want to see these precious recipes and traditions die. And, you know, I'm the one that really has all the parties with the polenta parties. And
where were your grandparents from in Italy?
They were all actually born in Perugia, in my paternal grandparents. They were born in Umbria. Now, my maternal grandmother, she was actually born here. She was born actually in Nanicoke, which is down the line from Scranton.
Let me ask you another question. Where was your maternal grandmother's parents from? Perugia as well?
Yes, they were. They were all born there, pretty much from the same area. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, wow. So all your grandparents, what we would call today the north of Italy or central Italy.
Central Italy, correct.
Because that tradition is so prevalent in the south of the mm-hmm. Easter bread made with eggs, mm-hmm. or even just to make a cookie with a hard-boiled egg in it.
Right, right.
I did not know that it also existed in Perugia.
Well, you know what? Now, that was on my aunt, my dad's sister, but she kind of tweaked a little bit. She married a gentleman and they were from southern Italy. They were from Sicily. So I think she kind of mixed them up a little bit, but because my grandmother never did anything like that, my mother's mom with the eggs, you know, in the.
So I was going to say in Sicily, they have a cookie that is made. It's basically like a cookie that's made with a hard boiled egg. In the center and Easter egg, because throughout the Mediterranean, in Greece and southern Italy, Easter eggs were incorporated into Easter breads. So you made regular bread all year long, and you sweetened it, and you put some dairy in it, You might put some milk in it or some type of cheese in it, some type of sugar for Easter. And so that would be part of breaking the Easter fast. And eggs, which have such a long in Christianity with Easter and with resurrection, would be incorporated into the bread. But also, the priest would bless the bread and the eggs in honor of Easter. There were certain select blessings. And now in Italy, even though in a lot of places the Easter bread with the egg is still made, it doesn't have the wow effect it had for our ancestors.
Right.
So that was kind of the specialness of it. And you in North, because so many people don't realize, like the people in Jessup from Gubbio, there is a strong Northern Italian connection to Northeastern Pennsylvania that people don't realize it's there. And, you know, another thing is also, I've said, a lot of Italians, when they came here, came up with their own recipes. The Italian predisposition to creativity evolved. So someone who was from Perugia, who married someone from Sicily, could come up with a hybrid that was not only a mark of their own amalgamated family, but of a new and inventive America.
Exactly.
But we just want to compliment you because this epic work you did of transferring, how else would your niece have had this connection to her great-grandparents had it not been for you?
Absolutely.
And we want to encourage people because once it's gone, it's gone.
Well, that's exactly it. And that's one thing, you know, I refuse, you know, I just love it all. I really do. And, you know, I know you mentioned about the Easter breakfast was probably as big as Christmas Eve dinner. We always had Easter breakfast. That was tradition. And that Easter breakfast went on for hours and hours. And I mean, it started with frittata. My grandmother would make it in a huge black skillet. And I still have the skillet. And, you know, with the potatoes, and then we would have the biscotti and the ciambelloni and pizzelles and, I mean, everything, the cheese crescia and, it just was delightful. You know, it's just so unfortunate that, you know, there's really, everyone has pretty much passed, you know, in my family. It's just, you know, my brother and I, and we were fortunate that my mom had one sister and they lived right next door to us. So I basically had two moms, let's put it that way, my mom and my Aunt Eleanor. And our home was always referred to as like a compound because my aunt had three daughters and it was my brother and I. So we were raised pretty much as one family. We had every dinner together in the summertime. We were outside on the picnic table. We ate dinner every single day, you know, together. Such great memories, you know, and you know, having the parties all the time, that this is where everyone comes is now I've carried on that tradition and I love it. I really do. It's just wonderful.
And that's why we've honored the people that we've honored with this first round of awards, because our desire to give these golden stars are to encourage other people.
Absolutely.
Whether it's building your own Prosecco, jarring tomatoes for the first time at home for 30 years, writing a cookbook for your niece with all the family recipes so that they won't be lost, and continuing the Easter bread tradition. And the reason we hope it inspires other people is that by doing this, we can guarantee you a dividend. No one is going to come back and say, I wish I hadn't wasted time on writing the cookbook, or I wish I had never built the Prosecco, or they're going to be cursing and screaming while they're doing it. Why the heck am I jarring these tomatoes? I can get them in the shop.
Right.
But when Mike jarred the tomatoes and he brings all of his family together and pass it on to your children and everyone's gathered around a cauldron jarring these tomatoes, that's what makes us who we are.
Absolutely.
And we know our viewers that if they take up some of these traditions, that they're going to receive a benefit from them, a dividend. And so that's why we have picked three outstanding Italian Americans to honor.
Awesome.
So on behalf of a grateful community, we just want to say thank you.
And I thank you. This was awesome. Really great.
I really love hearing all these stories, especially stories about people who are taking action to revive something that was lost. I think that that's the most beautiful thing you can do. I think the idea that just because something has not been done or gone into sort of hibernation, we oftentimes think that means it doesn't need to exist. And I think that's unfair. I think that that's sort of a defeatist attitude. And so to be able to hear these stories and hear these examples of people who are aware of how important it is to put in that extra effort, because it is, it's a lot of work, you know, and this is a very inspiring chance for us to reconnect to the stuff that makes us passionate about being Italian American and hear the things that make other people and those who are out there listening to what we're doing passionate about being Italian American. And Pat, this was great. I really appreciate you coming up with this.
And I really have to say a special thank you to Mike Giordano, because it was all the positive messages that I've received from Mike about how the podcast has positively impacted him and his family and his concept of, I'll say, the Italian American civilization, and the fact that he decided to jar tomatoes with his children, and the love that he has for his son when they listen to the podcast. He was the inspiration why I came up with this award, because I want to tell those people, we appreciate you for the encouragement you give us to keep this going, because it's a lot of work. I don't think people know. John hoodwinked me in this. I don't know how I got into it, but it went into a hobby and it's become a way of life for us. But what keeps us going is when we see positive results, like the beautiful messages I get from Mike, and I see the beautiful things it's doing for his family. We want to spread this love to everyone. We want to make this a contagious disease in the best sense, that we want it to spread everywhere. We want a pandemic of Italian civilization.
Amen. Let's hope we spread this contagion everywhere. If you or somebody that you know and love is out there and has revived a family tradition or brought it forward or created something yourself that brings the family together, you are clearly eligible for this amazing Patrick A. O'Boyle Award, whatever its name may end up being. I think it'll change a million times. But let us know. Write to us on ItalianAmericanPodcast.com. Find us on social media. Send us a message. Let us know what it is that you or your loved ones are out there doing that deserves to be in the second round of this new award that I think says a lot about the commitment that's out there to keeping the community going and evolving it forward. So from all of us at the Italian American Podcast, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
And your life will be great. See that you're born an Italian. If you want your life to be great, see that you're born an Italiano, and your life will be great. See that you're born an Italiano.